A 4,300-mile journey across the Pacific on a balsa wood raft may seem impossible, but it's precisely what Thor Heyerdahl, who called himself an experimental archaeologist, did in 1947. Mr. Heyerdahl theorized that the people of the Polynesian Islands were the descendants of pre-Columbian people from South America. And to give legitimacy to his controversial theory, and using only supplies that were available to the populations of pre-Columbian, he built a handmade raft he called the Kon-Tiki. It's also the name of the 1950 Oscar-winning documentary and a newly released Academy Award-nominated film that depicts Thor and his crew's incredible journey. Joining us to talk about the films and about the real story it's based on are Olav Heyerdahl, the grandson of Thor Heyerdahl, and screenwriter Petter Skavlan. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Olav, didn't you take a similar expedition in 2006?
Yeah, that's right. We built a basswood raft. We went into the same area in the jungle in Ecuador. We found our logs. And we lashed it together with Manila hemp rope and sailed the same distance, yeah.
In the same amount of time, 101 days?
Well, we beat them with one month because we based our raft on the experiences from the Kon-Tiki. And the Kon-Tiki, they crashed into a reef in Polynesia after drifting across the Pacific with the Humboldt Current for 101 days. So we basically built the raft my grandfather would have built today with the steering technique he did a lot of science on afterwards.
Although in all cases it was made with the kinds of materials that would have only been available to people in pre-Columbian South America. He didn't use iron nails, for example.
No. Only natural hemp rope and basswood logs and bamboo, yeah.
And his crew is made up of 5 inexperienced sailors. Was yours?
No. In 2006, on this basswood journey, it was my first sailing experience. But we had like a experienced Viking ship skipper who used to sail Viking ships back in Norway.
Why did your grandfather want an inexperienced crew?
Because he was proving a theory, and he didn't want to be caught by using skilled sailors. So he did that by purpose, using non-salesmen.
These would be people from the Incan Empire at the time?
Yeah.
This is before, not long before the Spaniards came to South America and conquered the Incan Empire. I assume neither the original sailors or your grandfather's crew or you had any preserved food. So how did you keep food?
You know, we did a lot of fishing across. We had like 50 meals of dorado, you know, the gold mackerel.
You ate it raw?
Yeah, we did. We made ceviche and also sushi. Yeah, we did.
Is being on a raft in the middle of the ocean constant work, or does it allow for a fair amount of time to just sit and think or look out for sharks?
Yeah, well, many days are similar and many days are boring. So it's really, really important to keep yourself occupied by reading or doing some crafting and, keeping busy. It's really important not to be mentally disturbed after a while.
Petter, you wrote the screenplay in collaboration with Thor Heyerdahl before he died?
Yes, I was fortunate enough to work with him. This feature film, has a long and troubled story. It started in... was conceived here in New York in 1996. Thor Heyerdahl's Norwegian publisher met Michael Douglas at the studio of Jim Rosenquist. And Michael Douglas said to Thor Heyerdahl's publisher, I know 2 Norwegian stories. One is The Heroes of Telemark. The other is Kon-Tiki. We know that The Heroes of Telemark...
Although, Michael Douglas's father, Kirk Douglas, appeared in a film called The Vikings.
I know he did.
Should have known a little bit more than that.
And he said, somebody should make a movie out of Kon-Tiki. And the publisher managed to get the rights off Tui and give them to Jeremy Thomas, a very famous English movie producer who'd produced The Last Emperor. And then they tried to write scripts. I think 3 writers were involved before me, and Tuir had script approval and turned them down, all of them. And then in 2001, as a sort of last shot, they thought, is there a Norwegian who writes in English? And they got me. And I traveled to Tenerife and sat down with Tuur Heyerdahl and worked with him.
Now, what would be the problem here? You have the original documentary, and then you have Thor's book on the voyage. You just simply go back to the original source material, don't you?
No, because Tuur had script approval, and he was very wary of being the Kon-Tiki man. And he wanted a film with a slightly larger scope than Kon-Tiki. So we actually constructed the story that starts in 1937 when he goes on his honeymoon with his first wife to Fatu Hiva, and he conceives this theory about Pacific migration.
And which went against everything that scientists believed in those days. They thought that all the people in Polynesia had come from Asia, not from South America.
Exactly.
And it makes sense, does it?
Yeah, it does make sense. Tuur had one thing that he was adamant about. He said, Petter, this movie, I want one thing to come out of this movie, and that is for young people to question authority.
Well, in his case, of course, he was looking at the way the ocean moved, and naturally, it would be a lot harder to get to the Polynesian Islands from Asia on a raft or a crude boat than it would be coming from South America. It's just that people, when we think of the Americas being populated by people from Asia, it just seems silly to then imagine that they went back.
Exactly. That's his huge life project, to try to prove that the oceans were not barriers between cultures, but actually pathways between them.
And then he had to convince people that his theory should be considered seriously, which wasn't so easy, and he had to find people who would finance this whole thing.
Yeah, it was it was not an easy task either to convince the scientists of the day that he was right, or to find crew or finance for this raft journey.
Now, Olaf, when you were on your voyage, did you, I'm sure you had the original documentary in the back of your mind, was it pretty similar other than hitting the reef and a few of the other problems?
Yeah, well, it was pretty similar. We brought my grandfather's personal diary on board, and also the logbook from the Kon-Tiki expedition. So we left on the very same date, on 28th of April. So that made us compare all observation, and you know, the how far we could sail for each day, and so on, and of course all observations we did across the Pacific.
And then there's the whole issue of sharks. Yeah. If anybody falls overboard, that could be really scary.
Yeah.
And just storms.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you hit any major storms?
No, not any major storms. We had, like, strong gale. And, you know, my grandfather, he wrote in the Kon-Tiki book that he had they experienced a lot of storms. But, you know, he was a good storyteller.
So you think he added that for drama? But he had the documentary. They actually were filming it. Was that a last-minute decision to bring a cameraman on?
That was a last-minute decision because he was constantly looking for ways to finance this, and somebody told him that make a documentary and you might be able to sell it. And therefore the documentary that won the Academy Award in 1951 or whenever it was.
And changed his life.
And changed the lives of everybody on the raft.
Because one of the crew members wound up working for the U.S. government, didn't he? He became the United Nations,
Nations.
Secretary of Fisheries, and he started as a refrigerator salesman.
He did indeed. He was in New York, as a Norwegian in New York, just after the war, working as a refrigerator salesman.
What about the other members of the crew?
Well, one stayed in Polynesia. The Swede who was on the raft stayed in Polynesia and died there. Another of the crew members died on an expedition to the North Pole trying to reach the pole on skis.
Uh-huh,
one died by the shores of Lake Titicaca. They lived pretty amazing lives, all of them.
So he had inspired them to all be more adventurous.
Absolutely.
Now, is it true that your grandfather didn't actually know how to swim, even had a fear of water?
Yeah, actually he did. He had a few accidents when he was a child, and he almost drowned, I think, twice. So he was afraid of water, yeah. And when he did his Kon-Tiki expedition, you know, he believed so much in his theory that the ocean were crossed by these balsa wood rafts. And, he was believing, 100% in that theory. And so he didn't bother by not swimming.
Petra, when you were writing the script, did you really collaborate with, or did you just simply show him what you'd written and have him say, okay, this is okay, or no, add something else?
No, I really collaborated with him. We didn't collaborate in writing the script, but the outline, the take, which is a 20-page document, he signed off on every page. And that is basically the film that you see today.
Now, the author said, early man did not see the ocean as a barrier, but rather as a means of communication. And despite being in the middle of the ocean, the crew communicated via Morse code. How were they able to do that? Was the technology available to them at the time?
It was. He had. Funnily enough, he had one man who could operate a sextant, and he had two men who could operate a radio. So that they were fresh out of World War II, and they were wartime radio operators.
They've been underground radio operators.
Yeah, and you know they had the technology available from 1947, and they used it. So, yeah.
Did you leave from the same area in Peru that he had?
We went into the same area in Ecuador, and we brought the logs to the very same spot in Callao, the port of Lima in Peru. And we built inside this marine base and got help from Peruvian authorities as well. So.
Because the Peruvian authorities liked the idea of proving that that the original Polynesians actually had come from Peru or some other area along the coast of South America.
Tuir Heyerdahl, the president of Peru at that time, was Bustamante, and Tuir managed to convince President Bustamante that he would prove that Peruvians populated Polynesia.
Even though people thought this was a crazy idea, it was covered by the press, wasn't it? The New York Times, several other media outlets covered the trip and its progress as it was going on. How were they able to communicate with Dora? Was that all through the Morse code?
Through radio. I think it's important to see this in perspective. In 1947, when the journey happened, the world was war-weary. Everything in the papers was about the Nuremberg trial and the Marshall Help and rebuilding. And suddenly this little story of these rafts, men on a raft, appears on page 18 in the newspaper. And it travels up to the front page because people were just thirsty for something that wasn't about the war.
And it seemed crazy. How scary is it being on a balsa raft in the middle of the Pacific Ocean? The vast Pacific Ocean.
It's not that scary, actually. You feel it takes a few weeks to get familiar with the new elements and being on a balsa raft. But it's all about staying on board. And, you know, this balsa raft floats very well. And it's a flat bottom construction. And it's really, really stable.
Did you consult on the making of the film? Because you'd had the experience?
Yeah, actually, the raft used in the film, that is the raft I crossed the Pacific with in 2006. And I built it for the film, and I was a consultant for the actors and the directors. Yeah,
because you have to know how. Well, first of all, they weren't in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, were they?
No, they were filming in the Mediterranean.
Yeah. A lot safer.
Yeah.
Americans won't know the names of any of these actors, but are these well-known actors in Scandinavia?
Yes, some of them are, and some of
them...
They
speak in English?
Yeah.
Is there a Norwegian version?
We actually shot the film in two language versions. Each take with dialogue is shot twice, once in Norwegian and once in English. And it's the Norwegian one that was Oscar-nominated and the English version that's being released this week.
Had the 1950 documentary helped you in developing the script?
Very much so. And the documentary plays a part in the movie. We use the making of the documentary as a dramatic element.
My guests have been Petter Skavlan, who wrote the script for a new film called Kon-Tiki, and Olav Heyerdahl, who is the grandson of Tor Heyerdahl, the man behind the Kon-Tiki voyage. The film opens this Friday, just a couple of days from now, at the Paris Theater on West 58th Street and the landmark Sunshine Theater on Houston Street. And I want to thank both of you so much for being here. Are you going to go back out and do some other foolhardy thing in the near future?
Yeah, there are some plans for next year. And in 2010, we also built a catamaran made of 16,000 plastic bottles to get focus on the, all the floating garbage in the Pacific.
Well, Tor went out on other voyages, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He crossed the Atlantic on reed boats, and he'd been around.
Thank you both so much for being on our show today.
Thank you for having us.
And good luck with the film.
Thank you.